It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
It's the 4 o'clock hour, so we welcome in our friends in Reno to Cofield and Company. Candy in for Cofield, Greg Salerno down at Stadium Swim at Circa, Damon in the Finley Toyota Studios, and let's get right into it in the Big Four because we got to talk workouts and I need some opinions.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Musician Lenny Kravitz is 59 years old. That is not readily apparent by looking at photos or video of Lenny Kravitz. And you might say, Adam, why are you looking at photos and video of Lenny Kravitz? And I would say, good question. It's not something I go seeking out. I do not have alerts on my phone for what did Lenny Kravitz say today. Greg, favorite Lenny Kravitz song?
I'm going to go with Are You Gonna Be My Girl? No, it's not even him. I don't know. I don't know any Lenny Kravitz songs right now. I'm sorry. I don't remember any of them at all.
You tried to make that one off the top of your head, and I appreciate that. How about Bolo Ty Cotton? You got a favorite Lenny Kravitz song?
Of course. It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
I like it.
American like Woman. Damn it. American Woman.
I'm a Flyaway fan, too, so that works. We've covered a small portion of the Lenny Kravitz catalog. Lenny Kravitz is also known for his workout attire, which is not all that dissimilar from his everyday attire. The man owns more mesh shirts than Right Said Fred. And if you don't get that reference, head over to YouTube right now and figure it out. But Damon, he posted a video that made me think of you because you are our expert on all things workouts. And I needed to get your opinion because not only did Lenny Kravitz show up to his workout with his trainer in what appears to be a gym with other regular people wearing leather pants. Pause. Think about it. Wearing leather pants. But he also had some very interesting form on the workout he was doing. And it's radio. The best I can do is try to describe this to you. But imagine him being, I'm going to say reclined at about a 45-degree angle, like almost on a machine that you would be doing ab workouts. But then not only pulling himself up by his abs, but while holding a bar, which appears to have 45-pound weights on each side, bringing himself up to upright and then pressing that bar. Again, while wearing leather pants in a gym, Damon, have we been working out wrong all this time?
No, we've been working out right. And for the lifters out there, he's on a decline bench, and it looks like he's going back into a skull crusher, coming up with a crunch into a shoulder press. And it's probably only 10 pounds on the side for him to be able to do all of that in one fluid motion. But no, this is something that this is definitely celebrity trainer. Hey, Lenny, I've got something for you. This is the new cutting edge when it comes to working out. I love everything
now, Lenny,
about it.
Yeah, Lenny's shredded. Like, Lenny, the pictures that we see, Lenny is shredded, and he apparently, as you know, and this is why I went to Damon for expertise, because he gave us skull crushers and the decline bench and things that I haven't seen since my 20s. So it's fine. I actually appreciate being given the knowledge. We're teaching Damon about the OJ chase, right, and he's teaching us about skull crushers and the decline press. But let's I have to check in with you on this part, Damon. The leather pants. Now, comments on his social, Nick Cannon loved him. And if there's an expert on pants and what happens inside them, it is Nick Cannon. Like, we know that. And we also saw Winnie Harlow. We saw A-Rod. Many different people. Wiz Khalifa saying that he needs to step up his workout gear. Damon, are you a leather workout person?
Not at all. You can only pull this off if you are a solidified rock star. And that's what Lenny Kravitz is. This is one of those, when they say they don't make them like they used to, this is a video you show them. Because no one in the music game today could pull this off.
You know what it reminds me of? You remember that Charlie Murphy story about when he said that he hung out at Prince's house and they all went and played basketball and they all came out in blouses and like leather pants and stuff and then beat their ass in basketball? That's what it reminds me of. I feel like Lenny Kravitz works out in that same outfit.
Yes.
Game. Blouses.
Exactly.
That's not our last Chappelle reference on this show, by the way. There's more coming up. My concern here is the sweat. Because you are going to sweat profusely if you're working out at any sort of intensity. And I have to think that this decline bench, skull crush, shoulder press situation for Lenny is causing not only some sweat, but what has to be some pretty significant chafing. Because I don't know what sort of athletic support you could be wearing under those pants to be able to make this not a horrendous experience. Like, I would think your body temperature has to go up like 30 degrees with everything that is being trapped in your nether regions doing workouts in leather pants. No, nobody? Okay.
I'm sorry, guys.
Sorry. Is it just me thinking about what's going on inside Lenny Kravitz's leather pants?
Maybe it is. What's going on in those pants? I don't think there's too much sweat going on. Maybe this is just a strictly lifting day. He's maybe taking some time in between those sets because he's also wearing a thick pair of boots. So he's not doing too much cardio. If he's just going around from, you know, station to station, just pure lifting, and if it's an upper body day, he may not feel the effects of any leg chafing at all.
I'm actually more concerned about the shirt, if I'm being honest, because I've never met a person wearing a mesh shirt like that that didn't smell like BO. I don't know about you guys, but every person I've ever met wearing one of those shirts, whether they're working out or not, smells like BO. So I'm a little concerned about the shirt, but.
Yeah, does it even qualify as a shirt, though? Like,
it's more of a screen.
It looks, it's mesh. It looks like something that would be like chainmail for a knight of armor, except it's made from, you know, twine or something like that.
Or like when you buy incense at the store and it comes in that bag, that weird bag, kind of looks like one of those bags, a mesh bag or something. But that smells good, so that's like actually bit opposite. So.
All right, so let's close it on this. Damon, are you changing your workout routine based upon what you just saw from Lenny Kravitz?
No, not at all.
If it works for Lenny, it should work for you. Number three.
Number three.
Apparently, we're going to go back to talking about Aaron Rodgers on this show. We are going to actually talk a little bit of Jets in about 15 minutes. Rich Smitty is going to join us to do a little Jets draft preview. But let's first discuss Aaron Rodgers and his latest comments about RFK. I told you all weeks ago, you were not ready for Aaron Rodgers as your vice president. The man is a walking truth bomb, and you people are human diffusers. You can't deal with it. None of you want to hear what Aaron Rodgers has to share with you. He went into a darkness retreat, and he wanted to bring all of you into the light. And what did you do? You said no. I don't want to hear what you think about vaccines. I don't want to hear about what you think about ayahuasca. I don't want to know what you've injected into your body to immunize yourself. Not everybody. To vaccinate yourself. To immunize yourself. You were all not ready for what Aaron Rodgers had to bring to you as the Vice President of the United States under the RFK ticket. Here's what Aaron Rodgers had to say after being passed over. Only because you people couldn't handle it. For vice president on the RFK ticket. Quote, so Bobby loses his uncle, JFK, his father, RFK, his cousin dies in a plane crash when he was running against Hillary Clinton. I'm not saying that was a conspiracy, but it's kind of a weird coincidence. Okay, pause. This is Adam Candy talking. No, it's not. Okay, back to the quote. Bobby's in danger, you know? Like, he's putting himself on the line. Why? Because he effing believes in this country. He believes in this country. He believes in the good in people, and he believes he can make a difference. That's somebody I can get behind who's willing to lay it on the line. I am ready to run through a wall for President Aaron Rodgers. I don't want to hear about a Kennedy. That's the old guard. That's the old way of thinking. That is what got us to where we are today in 2024 in America. I've heard enough from the Bushes. I've heard enough from the Clintons. I've heard enough from the Kennedys. I want to hear from the Rodgerses. I want to hear from the Rodgerses. I want to hear from Aaron Rodgers, truth bringer, believer in the country, a man who has your best interests somewhere below his. But I don't know that you are willing to join me, Greg and Damon. I don't know that you're willing to come along on this journey with me. Are you willing to get behind me, who is behind Aaron Rodgers, who is probably somewhere farther behind RFK Jr. because he didn't pick him for the ticket? But it doesn't matter, because we can run on our own ticket. We can get written in all across the country. We can do this. Damon, come with me.
No, because I don't want to put myself in danger.
What?
What kind
of danger?
Aaron Rodgers said Bobby's in danger. I can't put myself in that situation. I've got a family that loves me. Who knows what could happen if I become a part of this? It goes all the way to the top.
If something bad happened to you, I mean, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but it would be kind of a weird coincidence, right? Aaron said it himself. But
you're one day
okay,
gone
fine,
the next.
Fine. You know what? Fine. You're not ready. I understand. You're a young man. You still feel like you have a lot to live for. I am not a young man. I do not have as much to live for. I am still willing to fight for what I believe in, though. Greg Salerno, are you willing to go into the arena, shameless plug, for Aaron Rodgers?
No, he's really dumb. And
what?
No, I have to
you
say,
people.
First of all, he does not have a family that loves him, which we all know. But Aaron Rodgers might be one of the dumbest people ever to speak. Now, I would say that normally, if this was, let's say, 2015, and I'd never heard anybody say this stuff before, I would say he's probably one of the dumbest people I've ever heard speak. But now that people say this stuff all the time, I guess he's just as dumb as half the people on the internet, but he's still very, very, very dumb. That's just my opinion, though.
Because I'm a real believer in America and a real believer in Aaron Rodgers, I will give you the same thing that Aaron Rodgers gave himself, but only this one time. I'm going to give you both immunity.
What I love about this is that he is so steadfast in these beliefs now.
Oh, yeah.
He's went all the way down the rabbit hole. And you know when you say, oh, you can't dig yourself out of this one? I don't think he wants to.
No. He's officially in the cult. You need deprogramming at this point. He's not coming out. Never.
You know what?
Try to get him out. He'll go deeper in.
You know what I think would snap him out of it? If they gave him the host of Jeopardy job. I think he would clean his ass.
Is that where it started?
That's where it started. They said, you're not going to be the host of Jeopardy. And he said, you know what?
Fine. What's going to happen here? I don't have to be like on the ticket. All right. I'm willing to get into this on the ground level, because that's where real change happens. But I do think the ticket could be this. This ticket could be Aaron Rodgers and Mayim Bialik, the people who got screwed by Jeopardy. What has all of the facts for this world? Jeopardy has facts. Aaron Rodgers has facts, and you need the facts.
Yo.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Welcome back in, our friends in Reno, here on Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas. Salerno, Candy, Damon, as Cofield enjoys a well-earned rest after his trip down to the Final Four. Let's roll along with our preview team by team of the NFL draft with Rich Simini from ESPN, covers the New York Jets. Rich, welcome. Thanks for giving us a little bit of time today.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much. So as we look at the Jets and a season that took its pretty much most impactful turn four snaps into the year last year, and we start to look toward 2024 for the New York Jets organization. What can be taken from the 2023 season, or maybe more importantly, what is the Jets organization taking from its 2023 season and carrying forward with Aaron Rodgers on his way back in 2024?
Well, I don't know how much they can take out of it. It was the fastest season in NFL history. I think it lasted about a minute and a half. But, right. So I'm not sure if there's, like, lessons to be learned. I mean, they played good defense again, but I think we all expected that. You know, they have a really good defense, and I think they played, I think they finished third in the, you know, total defense. So we know they have a good defense, and we learned a lot about Zach Wilson, who we found out is not the answer, you know, for the Jets. And I'm sure his days are numbered on the roster, so they're moved on from him, and they got a better backup in Tyrod Taylor. And once again, everything is hinging on number 8, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if he's healthy for at least 14 games, I think the Jets have a really good chance to be a playoff team. If he suffers a long-term injury again, then I think the Jets will be finished again.
Rich, as we look at what's happened thus far in the offseason as the Jets try to build and rebuild around Aaron Rodgers, try to maintain that defense as best they can, we know obviously that that Bryce Huff left, and in comes Hassan Reddick, Mike Williams on the offensive side, along with Greg Zuerlein, the re-sign Solomon Thomas, C.J. Mosley, among others. What has been your takeaway from the way the Jets have chosen to approach free agency thus far?
Well, it's pretty clear by all of these moves that you just mentioned that everything is geared toward this year. It's totally win now, all eggs in the basket for 2024. This is a coaching staff and a front office that has to win. They've basically been put on alert by the owner. So another non-playoff year will probably prove extremely detrimental to their job security. In other words, they'll be out of a job if they fail to make the playoffs. So everything like Williams and Tyron Smith and Hassan Reddick, these are guys on one-year deals. There's no thinking about tomorrow. It's all about today for the Jets in the offseason.
Rich, so when it comes to this draft, the Jets have the number 10 pick, so they're in a kind of a sweet zone because we expect a run on quarterbacks early. So which position should they be looking at? Because from someone who wasn't a fan, but seeing how Aaron Rodgers went down and from what I saw from that season of Hard Knocks, offensive line should be their target, right?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I'm an offensive line guy. I mean, they did sign Tyron Smith, who, let's face it, you know, the guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. He's an 8-time Pro Bowler. But the thing is with Smith is he's 33, and he's been injured a lot in recent years. Now, he did play 13 or 14 games last year, and when he played really well. He was a second-team All-Pro. But you can't ignore that injury history. And their right tackle, Morgan Moses, who they picked up in a trade with the Ravens, is 33 years old. And he's a durable guy. He's been durable throughout his career. But he's coming off pectoral surgery that he had after the season. So he's a little bit of a question mark as well. So if I'm the Jets, I go to that offensive line and I add another tackle. This is a potentially historic tackle draft. There are a bunch of good tackles. You could see 7 or 8 go in the first round. I think the Jets could get the second best tackle. I think Joe Alt will be gone in the first probably 7 picks, but the Jets at 10 should get the second best tackle. However, there's some school of thought. I know most of the mock drafts have the Jets taking Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia, just to bring another playmaker in for Aaron Rodgers. So it really becomes It comes down to, do they want the playmaker or extra protection for Rodgers? I don't know the answer to that question now. Me, I would take the extra protection.
A lot of talk about Rodgers' injuries, and of course, at his age, that's, you know, of course. But when you talk about off-the-field stuff, is the team at all concerned? Like, what's the concern level that he might say something off the field that might either distract the team, embarrass the organization, et cetera? And is that going to factor into their drafting at all?
No, they're not going to. I mean, they're going to draft. I think there's a good chance they'll draft a quarterback on day 3. You know, like try to find a developmental guy in the 4th, 5th, 6th, seventh round, one of those type of guys, but certainly no one that would become an immediate threat to Rodgers. I don't think they're concerned about what he's saying. I mean, everything he said has been in the off season. The team isn't together. The players really like him, despite what you might read or hear. He's pretty well respected in the locker room. A lot of the players really revere him. And so unless he starts saying stupid stuff during the season or during training camp, and I think he's smarter than that to do that, then I don't think it'll become a distraction at all. I think he's very into team building and chemistry, and I expect he'll be there for the voluntary workouts, which start next week. And he knows his legacy is on the line here. This could be the last chance for him. I mean, he says he wants to play up to 4 more years, but you never know. This could be his last year, and I think he wants to maximize the opportunity.
All right, so on the Jets draft preview that you have up at ESPN right now, we're talking to Rich Cimini from ESPN. You list offensive tackle, wide receiver, safety as top three needs. The Jets have the number 10 overall pick. They also have a third, 2/4, a sixth, and 2/7. Do you expect them to be at all active in trying to move around in the draft, or do you think they're pretty well set with the picks that they have?
No, I do think they'll move around. Joe Douglas, their GM, has a track record of moving around. He's never traded down in the first round in his previous four drafts. He's always traded up if he moves. So I think he could trade down this year. I think this kind of feels like a trade down year for a change, because they do not have a second round pick. That went to Green Bay in the Rodgers trade. And I know the Jets would really like to recoup a second round pick. So I think that's a possibility, that they move from 10 to maybe in the middle of the middle teens and still get a pretty good offensive tackle and get an extra pick. And I wouldn't rule out even trading up a couple of spots, because maybe to 8 to Atlanta, they need a, if one of those wide receivers is still on the board, one of those top three, I could see the Jets moving up a couple of spots. But given what they have in draft capital, I think they're looking to gain extra picks. So that's why I think trading down might be more likely than trading up.
When it comes to the Jets and their draft capital, I want to take it back to last year's draft. Their first round pick, Will McDonald. What's the sense around the Jets of his production in year one? I'm not saying that maybe he could be a part of a trade package, but are they satisfied with his rookie production, and do they expect him to have a bigger role in year two?
They are not satisfied with his rookie production. I mean, he did not play much at all. I think he played a little under 200 snaps. He was basically like the fifth defensive end on the team, and they play only four usually. He kind of rotated in a little bit. It was almost like a redshirt year for him. It was a year to develop. He's an undersized player. He needs to get bigger in his upper body. He needs to work on some counter moves. So it was not I don't want to say it was a bad rookie year, but he played the fewest snaps of any first round pick in last year's draft. And so they've been trumpeting his development and saying, well, we expect him to take a big leap in year two, but yet they go out and trade for Hassan Reddick, which tells you that they don't expect him to be a frontline player this year. So I think he will play more than last year. I think he's got some potential, but he is not one of their top three defensive ends. I'd say he's probably their fourth defensive end.
You sort of answered my question already, but the trade for Reddick, obviously they let Bryce Huff go to the Eagles in free agency. He's 25 years old. Reddick's a little bit older. Were they in the market for an edge rusher already? Was that something that just presented itself, or was it because they lost Bryce Huff, they went out and made the trade? Because he's obviously an older player, and they're going to have to pay him more money. Do they feel like he's an upgrade?
Yeah, they feel like he's an upgrade. Bryce Huff is a really good player, and you mentioned his age. I think he'll be 26 during the season. Or soon, and I thought the Jets should have kept Huff. He went for 3 years, $51 million. You know, it is a lot of money, but I think he's an ascending player. I think, however, for what they need right now, Reddick is the better player right now. I mean, Reddick is, he's got the fourth highest sack total in the league over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And 15.5 sacks. He plays the run better than Bryce Huff. He'll play more than Bryce Huff. Bryce Huff was a 42% playtime guy, and Reddick will be in the 60 to 65% playtime range. So they're going to get a player who plays more, who plays better for this year. The downside, it's only this year, and it's $15 million on the cap. It's a big cap hit. And so, but like I said at the top, the Jets are all about this year. It's all about today. They don't care about tomorrow.
All right, Rich, we'll get you out of here on this, and it's cliche, but hey, it's fun. It's Thursday, April 11th, and we have Rich Smini covers the Jets with ESPN here with us. Who do the Jets end up taking at number 10?
Well, if the draft falls the way I think it's going to fall, and those top three receivers, Harrison, Neighbors, and Ajuste are gone, because I think the Jets would take one of those at 10. So if they're gone and Joe Alt is gone, which we all expect, I think the Jets would go for an offensive lineman at 10, and I would go with Talia Fuaga from Oregon State. He's a right tackle. I think Olu Fashanu from Penn State could be a factor as well. But I do think the Jets probably lean. I mean, everyone is going crazy about Brock Bowers. That's like Mel Kiper had that in his mock draft. And I get it. You know, he was a highly productive tight end at Georgia. You know, he's a good player. I just can't see Joe Douglas going for a tight end that high in the draft. I think he'll address the offensive line needs. So that's why I think a guy like Fuaga would fit in at 10.
Great stuff, Rich. We really appreciate your time. Catch Rich's work at ESPN. Thanks, man, and enjoy the rest of the draft season.
All right. Thanks, man. Take care.
Hanging out at Stadium Swim, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Thanks again to Rich Smini from ESPN as we roll through our draft previews talking about the New York Jets. He thinks they're going to take a lineman. He suggested, actually, the same lineman that Mel Kiper Jr. has mocked to the Las Vegas Raiders at 13 for the Jets at 10. Cofield & Company is live down at Stadium Swim at circa 3 to 6 p.m. here on Thursday. It's where Greg Salerno is, Adam Candy, DeMond back at the Finley Toyota Studios. Guys, the Masters is in full swing. No pun intended, but I did it anyway. The interesting thing to me about what we're talking about here with the Masters is that we are spending most of our time, most of our energy, most of our bandwidth talking about a guy who might not make the cut, who we're just kind of hoping maybe gives us an interesting storyline. And I know ruling out Tiger is a fool's errand after what happened a few years ago. I hear it over and over again. This is a different Tiger Woods. It's a different tournament that he's going into. Right now, in Augusta, Bryson DeChambeau in the clubhouse at 65, 7 under. He has the lead. Scottie Scheffler played a really good round. He's 6 under. He is the presumptive favorite. Willett, Hogard, both at 4 under. Max Homa, the California native, is at 3 under. But we're talking Tiger because we usually end up talking about Tiger in any tournament that he actually plays. He hasn't been on the court, I should say, on the course very much. Greg, I'll start with you on this. Is Tiger Woods still a draw for you? Are you going to watch specifically to see Tiger Woods if he makes the cut in the Masters this weekend?
It's funny. I will watch, but for different reasons than I used to. Like, when he first started, it was more of a Caitlin Clark kind of thing. Like, he was like a phenom, and he was just so good, transcendent type of player in the sport, and I used to watch for that reason. Now it's kind of like the car wreck sort of slowly drive by, you know, reason to watch. It's kind of like, what's going to happen here? Is he even going to make it through the tournament? Is he going to hurt his knee? Is somebody going to do something crazy in the crowd? Like, who knows what's going to happen? I'm definitely going to watch for that reason, but not for the same reason I would have when he was younger.
Car wreck is an interesting choice of words on on old Tiger.
No pun.
Yeah. You know, hopefully you can keep that one on the road there, Greg Salerno.
Yeah, yeah.
DeMond, you weren't really around for the glory years of Tiger Woods, at least in terms of your sports viewing, going back to when he was blowing away the field in the late 90s. What do you know about Tiger at this point? Like, what do you think about Tiger when you see him out there trying to recapture, I guess, whatever glory he can here in his late 40s?
For who, for what, is what I think when I see Tiger still out there. Why are you still doing this, man? You've done it all. It's okay. Rest, my brother.
I don't think he knows anything else, man. I just think this is how the man is programmed. This is what he is built to do. He built by Earl Woods to do this. And I don't know that there is a reprogramming that is going to happen with Tiger. I can tell you, going back a number of years, 2005, I was at the Masters covering it for the Las Vegas Sun when Ryan Moore was a phenom at UNLV, and the greatest live sports moment I've ever been a part of was I was standing probably about 50 yards away from the 16th green when Tiger hit the chip that we all thought was going the wrong direction and then started rolling back the right direction, stopped on the Nike logo, and then rolled into the hole, and then he ended up winning the tournament in an extra hole. Now, that is a moment I will never forget. It was a roar that went through my chest. I don't know that I can ever watch anything for Tiger that will match that, and I don't know that I want to watch it. I don't want to see Jordan on the Wizards, man. Like, I just don't want to. I don't want to watch that anymore. And it's not to say that it's all at that point for him, but for Tiger Woods today, it's not the Tiger Woods I remember, and that for me is enough that is going to, you know, it's just kind of keep me off it ultimately. So, DeMond, do me a favor here. Do me a favor. I want to do something here live for me. Got an interesting segment coming up next. Give me a little setup about what's coming up here on Cofield & Company.
We're going to be talking to UFC former bantamweight champion Aljamain Sterling, as he's going to be a part of UFC 300 this weekend. So I talked to him earlier today, and we're going to talk about his UFC bantamweight debut as he's moving up in the ranks.
That sounds like something you want to stay tuned in for. And you know, along those lines, the PFL and Bellator joined forces for the Ultimate Showdown on April 12th. That's tomorrow at the Theater at Virgin Hotels. Two tickets available to caller number 7 at 364-1100, 702-364-1100. Professional Fighters League tickets are available at AXS.com.
It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Cofield & Company rolling right along into your weekend, where UFC 300 taking place on Saturday. Candy Salerno and DeMond, who had a chance to talk to one of the greats in UFC.
Yeah, I was able to talk to Aljamain Sterling. He's the former bantamweight champion at 135, lost to rising phenom in the sport, Sugar Sean O'Malley. So you lose once, he goes up to up to 145 at bantamweight. And yeah, so this is going to be his first fight at 145. I've got to ask you guys, I know that you two aren't the biggest MMA heads, but this is UFC 300. UFC is hyping it up as the biggest card. If these two interviews that we have today are good, will it convince you to maybe check it out?
Just because you said that, okay. Yes.
Okay. The story's incredible. Yeah, DeMond, you sold me.
I know that there are a couple of bars where I can walk by outside and kind of get a look in the window and maybe watch 5 minutes. And, like, if you told me exactly what time a dude was fighting, maybe I would do that. But the thought that 50 or 75 bucks is coming out of my pocket, this guy better be saving babies from burning buildings.
Well, he's not doing that, but we started off the conversation of that jump up in weight. You know, for some guys, because he's about my size, when you don't have to cut as much weight, you know, starting at fighting at 145 instead of 135, I asked him, how does he feel? Maybe does he feel a little bit lighter?
Well, I don't feel lighter. I feel heavier. But it's nice. It's a nice change up of things. And I think it's more fitting for my body, my physique right now, where I'm at in my career. I'm older now. The weight cut's a bit harder. I'm a bit heavier. But I think it's just a, the right move, the right time, and everything seems to be falling into place.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. I said lighter, but I mean, does your body feel more comfortable, more natural, where you don't feel
nah,
like the
I bet you will,
experience of getting to 135?
Yeah, I know what you meant. Definitely, for sure. It's a much easier fight week in the sense of how much weight I have to cut and pull. I'm still super lean, though, so it's always tough. I'm sure it's tough for everybody, though, right? So getting down from 170-plus pounds is not the easiest, but it's definitely more enjoyable than it was at bantamweight.
And then your opponent, Calvin Kattar, what was the process for getting this fight made? We all knew that you wanted to move up to 145. Did you just take the first name that the UFC threw at you?
No, they offered me four names, and I decided to go with the highest-ranked one, which was Calvin Kattar. I looked up his resume, try to remember what were the last few things he's done, because, you know, it's a new division. I haven't really paid attention to it as much as I do at bantamweight. And I saw that he was out for a bit, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be out for a bit, so this just makes sense. Both of us come back around the same time and just see what's up. And he was the highest-ranked guy, so I'm not looking to fight backwards right now. We'll see how this fight goes on Saturday, and then from there, kind of figure it out on what's the next steps.
And then on Saturday, with this being that debut at 145, has anything been different about this training camp, or is there something more about your game that you can implement now that you have a, let's say, a more natural cut?
More energy, man. I think that's really what it comes down to. I just have way more energy than I have shown in my last few fights. Yeah, of course, they were five-round fights, but I've been saying this since 2019, the fight with Jimmy Rivera and Pedro Munhoz, especially the Pedro Munhoz fight, I felt like I slowed down a lot sooner than I normally would in the room. And I was kind of confused by that. I'm like, yeah, it was a crazy output. But at the same time, like, man, I was doing this the whole camp, but I'm starting to noticeably feel more tired. I'm noticeably seeing my weight going up a bit higher each time I make 135 after fight week is over. So it was just it was just good timing with everything. It just made sense. And that's the biggest change that I could speak on. I'm way more tolerable fight week than I would have been had been with.
Again, we're talking to Aljamain Sterling here on Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas. I want to ask you about the significance of being on this card, UFC 300. Was this one of the cards when you're talking about when you're going to make your 145 debut that you said, hey, I would love to be on this card when talking to the UFC?
Yeah, it was between this one or Miami. Miami would have been cool just because who doesn't want to fight in Miami, right? But this is a cool one in terms of significance, name value, how many eyeballs are going to be on this, the exposure. So if I go out there and do what I'm supposed to do, I think it just opens up a lot of doors, a lot of opportunities for myself. And that's what it's all about, right? Just creating more opportunities with this sport, more longevity, and hopefully fighting for another title with a big win if I could get past Calvin Kattar.
You mentioned fighting for a title. How many wins do you think you would need to get in this division to get that title shot?
One or two. I think if I can get a finish here, I could possibly just skip the line. Or I might need to have one more after. And if I look good in that, I could think I for sure could skip the line. So it just really depends. We don't really know when Ilya is going to come back to fight yet. I know they're planning to do his first defense in Spain. Against who? Nobody knows. And I think that just leaves an opportunity for the division to kind of shake out and figure itself out.
Also, I want to give you your props a little bit. You said skip the line. If you get two top 10 wins in the division, you're not skipping the line. You would have earned a title shot by that point. So yeah. I'm just saying, yeah, don't sell yourself too short there. But I do want to ask you about 135 in that division. Merab Dvalishvili, your teammate. How do you see that fight going if we ever see that fight with him and Sean O'Malley for the title at 135?
Well, I can see O'Malley trying to use a lot of footwork like he did in our fight. He uses it in all his fights, right? He's a good fighter. He's smart. He doesn't take a lot of damage. He's long. He's rangy. And I can see him trying to stay long with the kicks, use a lot of his feints. But that comes with the cost of energy expenditure. So I think I can see Merab getting to him in that second or third round where O'Malley would start to show signs of slowing down. And I think that's where Merab would start to take over.
When it comes to that pace that Merab has, and I know that you guys are good training partners, how does that help feel you when it comes to, hey, since I'm training with the best, I know that sometimes our fighters say, hey, the fight is easy because of how hard this camp was.
Yeah, for sure. That's always been my thing with Merab getting ready for the bantamweights. It was just, gas tank cardio for days to go with a guy like that, energize the bunny. You know he's not going to stop with the pressure constantly coming forward, and he's just going to be in your face pressing the whole time. So you get a guy like that, it makes for a good training session. It gives you a lot of confidence going into the fight with your cardio and things like that. So he's always a good piece of the puzzle to have in training camp.
And I know that you can't look too far past Saturday, but if you were to get this win and the title shot isn't in the cards, who would that next fight be at 145, in your opinion?
Honestly, I don't really know. I know Ortega just had a really good win. Oscar Evloev just beat Arnold Allen. I don't know. It just really depends. Wait, did they fight? Yeah, they did fight Arnold Allen and Mosar. So it just really depends what the UFC decides to do. And it depends on how I go through my fight, right? So I'm just waiting to see how everything shakes out. I don't really like to – I'm very confident. But at the same time, you know, the UFC is going to do what the UFC does. So we'll see.
Yeah. You said the UFC is going to do what the UFC does. Was there ever any thought in your mind that, hey, why isn't the UFC offering me a rematch? Or did you know that, hey, after I lost that fight, I want to move up to 145? Or was it just a mutual decision?
No, I wanted the rematch. I asked for the rematch. I was told no. And I already knew they were going to say no. I was like, let me just ask anyway, just for giggles, so I can at least say why I did ask. But I already knew they were going to say no. And once they said no, I was like, yep, I'm going to 45. You know, I'm not sticking around to fight nobody else at 35. Like, it's just no point. You know, I was planning to go up with a win, and I was going to stay there, win or lose, if I fought Volkanovski. And things didn't go my way, but here I am now, and I get an opportunity to do things the way I want to do it, right? You know, so write my own story, and a big win over Calvin Kattar is going to help me write that story a little bit better.
All right, guys, so that was my conversation with Aljamain Sterling. UFC 300 is going to be taking on Calvin Kattar. This is supposed to be the biggest UFC card of all time, guys. I'm so excited to be there. If you're interested at all, ESPN Plus, shell out the... It is pricey, guys. It is $60. So I'm lucky that I'm going to be in attendance. But if you're a UFC fan, this is one of those cards that you just have to watch.
So you discussed the fact that you two are of similar weights. Is there any chance you're next for Aljamain Sterling?
You know what? It wouldn't even be that, because I've been next to him in person a couple of times, and he's probably got about 2 inches on me in height, but maybe I could just more be his body double. Because when we were doing the interview, I was looking at his hair length, and I was like, man, I wish my hair was that long, because I'm also trying to braid it the way he has, where you could just, you know, braid it into a man bun. So I would just want to be more with him, be on his entourage. Funny story, a couple of fights back, I can't remember, but we're both walking into T-Mobile Arena, where the UFC has their pay-per-views now. And I'm saying, hey, what's up, man? You know, we were at the Toyota dealership. And he's like, yeah. And I thought that maybe I could just walk my way onto the floor with him. But then they looked at my badge and saw that it had no floor access. So that's where the conversation ended. But I thought that if I'm just walking and talking with a fighter, they're just going to shoo me onto the floor. Didn't happen that way.
Huh. Interesting. I'm thinking about this, and I like the idea of the body double thing, though, if you really think you can pull that off. And I'm not here to tell you no, but I think you should be trying to pull that off. And no disrespect to our friends at Findlay Toyota, but I think you should be trying to pull that off maybe at, like, the Maserati deal. Like, you should be going down to the win and trying to pass yourself off as Aljamain Sterling at the Maserati dealership.
No, that was
seeing
at
just how far this goes.
That was at a remote. So it was, hey, come down here and meet, if you want to meet me, Damon Cotton, but obviously he's the main attraction. So
yeah, but saying, you just do it again, but you show up.
I'm saying you need to, I'm suggesting you level up. Just the same way that Sterling is leveling up for this fight, look at me, fight guy. Let's say you need to level up just like he did.
Well, obviously, and with Shohei Ohtani, maybe all you have to do is say, I'm speaking for him. They don't know who's who at banks anymore. So maybe I could get $1 million out of his account that easily.
We are entering some very fraught territory here with the looking alike and sounding alike and things that I don't think we really want to necessarily do, Greg. I'll just go back here.
It's okay if Damon says it.
Is it though about Shohei Ohtani and Ipe Mizuhara? He's giving me that timeout signal like Chris Webber right now. He is like Michigan needing that timeout as badly as possible. That's what we'll do for DeMond's sake.